Il-program li ser tisimaw u għamiġi u plilkom biex xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the program that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm very pleased to have with me in the studio today Dr. Andrew Atsopardi. Just the usual few words about my guest. Dr. Atsopardi is a senior lecturer within the Department of Youth and Community Studies within the Faculty of Education here at the University. His lecturing duties focus on sociology, critical pedagogy, disability politics, community management, and obviously youth and community studies. And at present, Dr. Atsopardi is coordinating a master's in inclusive education and communities. He's had many papers published in scholarly journals of disability studies, such as Disability in Society and the International Journal of Inclusive Education. He has several papers published also in an electronic journal of the University of Leeds. He's reviewed books for the British Education Research Association and co-authored two texts, Developmental Programme for PSD Teachers in 2000 and Creating Inclusive Schools in 2002. He's recently published a text entitled Career Guidance for Persons with Disability and contributed a chapter in the forthcoming Reader, Disability and the Politics of Education, an international reader. Dr. Atsopardi is, of course, a well-known voice on the radio and also a well-known face on the TV screen. But today he's with us to talk about a piece of very fascinating research, I mean, I found it really interesting, about young people in Gozo. This is part two, and he'll explain why it's part two, and I'd like to welcome Dr. Atsopardi.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Tusha. Your English puts me in awe, so I think I'll be stammering every now and then, but I'll try my, I promise I'll try my best.
I'm sure you're absolutely fine. I think it's important, the start of this program. Unfortunately, we only have 26 minutes or something, but anyway, it's important to mention the Department of Youth and Communities Studies, which is within, as I said, the Faculty of Education. Something about its courses, yes. Its raison d'etre.
Well, the Department of Youth and Community Studies is the latest addition to the department in the Faculty of Education. It's been promoted to being a department these last, I would say, 7-8 years offhand. And before it was a program within also the Faculty of Education, but it was a program. And before that, prior to that, it was an institute. And at that particular period, being an institute did not entail being part of a faculty. Sort of the concept behind being an institute was to cross-fertilize the professions and the fact that youth studies is fed into by a number of other disciplines. But recently we've been, as I said, promoted to the as a department. Our first director was Dr. Anthony Atsopardi. We carry the same surname, but we're not related, even though I have a lot of respect towards Tony. He's worked immensely in the field of youth studies. Then Tony resigned, and there was Marilyn Clark as the second head of department, and currently we have Dr. Albert Bell, who is the head of department. It is a department that offers a variety, a wide spectrum of courses. It starts from the level of diploma, BA, and masters. We also have my first PhD student as well. So it practically covers the whole spectrum of courses. Our courses focus essentially around developing youth workers, and what we are trying to do is actually prepare people to actually work with young people, but in a professional way. We are very lucky locally that we have a lot of people working with young people, a lot of youth leaders. But in these last 10-15 years, we've realized the importance of having professional people and to give a bit of an idea of what a youth worker does, is a very similar role to social work, but with a particular focus on youth within the community. So it's a very exciting place to work in. It's a very exciting place to lecture in and to do research in, because we are continuously engaged in what we call youth. Maybe we'll have the opportunity to talk about that, because youth is a very political word, and so it's nothing is set in stone, which makes obviously our work very exciting and interesting.
In fact, one of the things that I read in the publication is, I thought you were quoting somebody who said that it is amazing how when you get people in a room talking about youth, their own children, other people's children, youth in general, how the level of emotion rises rapidly, and how people feel very intensely about youth.
That's right. If I'm not mistaken, Dr. Assopardi, Tony Assopardi, Anthony Assopardi, said this particular thing, and it's very true. Youth in itself is extremely emotional, and we think about youth as being at the forefront of political engagement, of activism. We think about youth as being at the center of the development our country needs to make, at different levels, in entrepreneurship, in politics, in any area. Then at the same time, somebody comes knocking the back door and tells us, listen, but youth are the same people who are primarily responsible for delinquency. They are not engaged in the community. They are not interested in the family, and so there's a collusion of ideas, and the collusion of perspectives, and the collusion of experiences. And as I said, that makes the debate very, very interesting. I'm a strong believer that there are more pluses to having youth around than the other way around, and for scientific reasons, not just for because I love being with youth, I love working with young people, but it's also because young people, in fact, at one point in the study, when we launched the study, I said it's important to see to understand young people as being the present, also as being the future. That's fine, they're the present and the future, but they're also the past. And most of what we have nowadays, most of the struggles that we've had in the past were guided, were led, were engaged by young people. If we think about what happened in the 80s, for example, the transformations that we saw in the 80s had to do with 18-year-olds, 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds, protesting, fighting for their rights, and then the adults were supporting these initiatives. If it was the 50s and the 60s, when there was the religio-political debate, once again, young people were in the forefront. In fact, our political leaders at the time were considered to be extremely young. And at that time, they were even younger, because the idea of being led by somebody meant that you have to be an elder, you have to be an adult. So young people are also the past, and I think that is a really important reflection that we need to make.
Another quote which I found extremely engaging in the publication, it's a quote by Wynn and White from the 1997 publication, referring to youth as a social construct. And it made me think, it's not an area I know anything about, so I read that and I sat back and I thought, what do they mean by that? Who is a youth in actual fact, and how do we define being a youth?
Well, defining youth is probably one of the most difficult things that we find ourselves trying to do. And in fact, I think it is unfair to try and define youth. First of all, because we need to depart from the basic, fundamental point that youth is not a homogeneous group. So I can be talking about three 17-year-olds who are in this room with us, and they have three different ways of interpreting the world around them, of interpreting technology, of the way they converge values with their lifestyle, etc. So youth, one of the big mistakes that we do is we actually try to define. I did that mistake myself in a way, because I think people need to reflect on who we're talking about to create a context. But so that is one thing we need to keep in mind. And we need to keep this in mind, because youth in reality is a social construction in the sense that it has been created. There are schools of thought who consider youth as being almost an artificial stage in our life course, because it was created really after the industrialization. And if we had to take, for example, the famous story, for example, of the Bible, when Jesus Christ was in the temple and his parents were looking for him, it's because being 12, being 11, or whatever at that time. So the shift, the transition was from being a child to being an adult. So once you have the age, a certain age, you immediately move into adulthood. Now, what we're seeing nowadays is that society has created this sort of buffer zone where young people can, where people can move from childhood to adulthood related to this particular age group are quicker, more intense, at times extremely emotional, because at every stage in our life we have transitions, but maybe in the period between, let's say, the end of childhood, 10, 11, and moving on to adolescence, etc., to early adulthood, there are a lot of transitions that we are making, which are happening at a very fast rate. So that was probably one of the reasons. The other reason was because society started seeing the potential of having young people in certain industries. The big issue of child soldiers as well, where young people have this enthusiasm, this impulsivity, I would call it possibly, to ensure and which ensured that things happened without too many questions. So there are a lot of dynamics around that concept. The truth of the matter is that we know that young people are a very important cluster in our society. We have pushed down responsibilities. For example, nowadays we know that our economy, unfortunately, most of our black economy, is managed or is run or is fed by young people. Working in kiosks, working in companies, working in small shops. So we've realized the potential, the strength in that sense, as far as workforce and economy is concerned. You can see also the strength that young people give to a political agenda. So we've realized that young people youth needs to be a cluster in its own right.
We have a situation where life expectancy over the last 50 years has grown. I mean, for women, I think it's over 80,
yes,
and possibly even for men now. And yet, in some ways, we've given our youth responsibilities at a younger age. For example, we've gone down, when I was young, I think voting was 21, and then that's it right. Went down to 18. The responsibility, although life expectancy has stretched, the responsibilities sort of seem to come earlier. And then, on the other hand, in a Western society, and I sort of Malta in general, that people now, with education being so much more readily available, they tend to be getting married later, so they're remaining at home. So the usual transitions from childhood to adulthood, which would include moving out of the family home, actually are being prolonged.
They are. It is a very, first of all, I think it's good to keep in mind that it's a very volatile phase in an individual's life, but also in the community. So things change, there are transformations happening. Let me put a sticky note to the side. If you had to see, for example, the job generation gap. At our time, Trish, probably, I remember having discussions at sixth form, and we were talking about this generation gap. But it was a generation gap between us being 16-year-olds and our parents being 40, 45, whatever year old. So we're talking about a generation made up of 20, 25 years. Nowadays, we are talking about a generation gap which is not older than 5 to 7 years. Why? Because a generation is defined by what makes it, what the commonalities that there are. So the facts seem to show, to indicate that after 5 years, life is changing so dramatically in the way we live, in the way we look at life, in our value scales, and what makes life important, what constitutes our life, that we have realized that five years is probably being, or 7 years, being overly generous and saying that people born in that span are. So things are changing, dramatically. The fact, I think an important factor that we need to zoom in is that young people have more responsibilities, because I think we have a better cluster of young people. I think society has realized that the ability, the analytical ability of young people, the critical level of young people, the critical abilities of young people, their ability to make choices has improved, has increased, and there are loads of factors around that. What we need to keep in mind, however, is that, in fact, this year, we're trying to dedicate this year, actually, to solidarity between generations, because I think you realize that we are focusing on the fact that young people have more strength and have they are building their capacity. On the other hand, we need to be careful that we are not losing out on the strength and on the qualities and on the capabilities of people who are considered as either, you know, they're old, or they're aging, or else they've retired from work or made to retire from work. So we need to sort of somehow try to bring both realities into the equation. Young people are more able to decide for themselves, to help society take some sort of direction, but we need to keep in mind as well that we don't throw overboard. I think this is something that we need to keep in mind, that we don't throw overboard the people who have designed the communities that we live in. I think there's space for both.
So let's move on to the Gosserton situation. Yes. We're talking in this study, which the original study was actually of Antonazzo Pardi. You've taken it up again. What about the Gosserton youth themselves?
First of all, this is not a comparative study, much as I would have liked it to be. So this
yeah,
came out.
That's a good point to make.
Yes,
yeah.
It's not comparing with Maltese youth, and it's not even comparing with European youth, and that is very important to keep in mind. I'm hoping and well, you need to pray a bit as well when it comes to research funds. So we're praying a bit as well to get some research funds, and hopefully this will be another stage that we'll be able to look at. So that is very important to keep in mind. So we're talking about youth, and the facts and the statistics and the indicators are for Gosserton youth. I think there's a lot of data which helps us understand that young people in Gozo go through particular dynamics. So on one hand, young people in Gozo are talking about the need to travel, the need to go to the EU, the need to have experience. The study shows that, indicates that young people, Gosserton young people, do not see the fact that they come to Malta to study or to work as being a tragedy. And this is something that it changed my perspective, because I thought it was. They actually see a lot of positive. They know that the experience, to garner certain levels of experience, they need to be exposed to a larger community. So they're in inverted commas, whatever that means, but they are very normal young people who are interested in life. However, in being interested in life, somehow they still manage to show an interest and to converge in this experience the need to preserve their dialect, preserve their identity in its widest sense. They want to be coming from Nadur. They want to be young people coming from Arla. So the identity, not only of the island per se, but also of their little communities. And in fact, one of them, I was struck by one of the young people who told me, we live in one of the focus groups, we live a double life. And I told him, this sounds very strange and very, you know, if there was a doctor in the room, they'd probably be worried about this issue of being a double life. And what they said, what they meant when we discussed this, was that they have an interest in being modern, and moving on with all that constitutes and makes up, you know, young people at the different ages that they come from. But on the other hand, they still feel the need and the importance to preserve their identity. And so they have a strong attachment to the community. There are indicators which show they are very highly involved in the communities, highly involved in voluntary work, if I'm not mistaken, something like 35% are involved in NGOs, which is a relatively high number, and about, I would say, 65 from the top of my head, I'm trying to remember the statistics, have been involved in voluntary work in Gozo. So they have this interest in preserving community, the community dynamics, what constitutes them. And what they talked about, and they were quite, well, I was going to use a bit of an inappropriate word on radio, but what they were angry about is that they felt that that Maltese people look down on them. And this really bothers them. And they were talking about having to almost be anonymous. Their identity has to be anonymous, or else they can't be very Gozotin. And that really bothered me, because I think it really showed up when I reflect on. So you can be Gozotin, but don't be too Gozotin. Don't use the dialect. Don't keep getting at me with the fact that you need to leave lectures 15 minutes before because you want to catch a ship. I think that is a bit of an excuse. And so they are struggling with this issue. And in fact, I was quite negatively surprised that in the Times of Malta, Claudia Clea ran a story about the study, and there was this microblogging, and the amount of I would call it racism, I can't think of another word, the amount of
negative
comments that there were in the blog. I at one point I was going to ask Claudia to either put it offline or because. But it really showed that there was antagonism towards Gozotins per se, and they are trying to find excuses, and they were saying things that you need to be appreciative because it's all about having Maltese people in Gozo spend all their money, etc. So there was this whole hullabaloo of ideas. But I think that was one of the striking issues that kept surfacing.
You referred to the fact of having choices nowadays in general. Young people, certainly in Western society, have more choices. There's been a social leveling that you don't have to remain always in the same social level that you were born into. People expect to move, there's much more dynamism. And yet, reading this, it seemed that though the Gozotin youths had more choice, they felt that they were also constrained by the traditional roles. Did you see that, or have I misinterpreted?
No. I think it is a fair comment, and I think it came out in the study. Young people feel that they are constrained by the identity the identity that they carry. But I don't think it's because they don't like it. It's because they know it creates an obstacle. It creates a moat, and I think we really need to reflect on this. We really need to think about the practicalities, because they were talking about, for example, not having particular concessions or fluidity when it comes to employment. And I've seen this around me happening all the time. The fact that there is technology and yet they have to come every day for lectures to the university or to MCAS. And with the technology that there is, can't you find a way how to make things easier and how to make things more manageable? They were talking about the issue, for example, of transportation. In fact, they weren't too keen on the tunnel. They were saying, listen, what we need is not a permanent link. We don't need a permanent link. What we need is less waiting time, we need better boarding facilities, we need possibly we need to consider priority boarding, better coordination between the Arriva buses and the boat, because you get the Arriva bus at 4, all they want to know is that the boat, the quarter to 6 boat, will they will be in time for the quarter to 6 boat. They want to schedule, not they're at Melia, they know that they're going to miss the boat with 5 minutes, and that means 45 minutes of waiting time. They want better Wi-Fi facilities on the boat and on transport, which helps facilitate. They are saying, why not? Why can't we have the boat that goes straight to San Mizon, because students would find that extremely helpful in terms of time and in terms of traveling then from the boat to the to university or sixth form or Amicus or whatever. So the, what they're talking about are practicalities which are there for people to notice, and they are there for people to take action on, and somehow they feel extremely frustrated that they can't have the right the same dose of aspirations, the same dose of you know, of what I would like to do in my life, because there are practicalities which have not been dealt with year after year after year. In fact, you initially made reference to the fact that this is the second study. It's because 10, 11 years ago, there was a similar study. It was done methodologically in a completely different way, so it was difficult to compare those two studies. But I obviously made a lot of reference to the to that previous study, and they were talking back then, 11 years ago, about having improved transport. And how come 11 years down the line, having three big ships, having you know, good facilities when it comes to MJR Harbour, but how come young people are still struggling with the same difficulties?
I would hope that a study of this nature would find its way onto the desks of the people who are in a position to do something about it. Unfortunately, our time has come to an end. I would like to thank Dr. Tsopardi for coming on the program and talking to us about the subject. And I hope that people have been listening.
Yes, yeah.
And that certain things might change. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye. Il program li għadkom kem smajtu kien miġjupli l-kom bixxewqat tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.